Hey, Joel Malkin for WJNO.com and my election spotlight on the race for Florida House of Representatives, District 81. Two candidates to fill the seat that is being vacated by Representative Tina Polsky, who we also are speaking to for a Senate race. Kelly Skidmore, the Democrat, versus Republican Dr. Solis Ben-Yonas. And we have Kelly Skidmore on the line, former state rep Kelly Skidmore. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Joel. It's my pleasure.
Now, we spoke during the primary, and I know that you have what I believe it says on your website, 14 years of legislative experience. That includes 4 years in the state house.
Yes, I was staff on the House and Senate side for 10 years and then ran for the Florida House in the same area. Part of District 81 is still part of what my former district was, District 90 back then. And I served from 2006 to 2010.
And the districts are going to change again in 2 years. The candidates have been telling me the ones for Senate because of redistricting. I'm assuming both the State House and the Senate's districts are going to be reapportioned, correct?
Well, the legislature is responsible for drawing the lines for the House, Senate, and congressional districts. And
yeah.
So you may remember they went to court eventually after the last time around, and the court had threatened to draw them themselves if the legislature didn't go back and try again. So it's a very, very important role that the legislature plays. And, it's coming up soon after the census. Every 10 years after the census numbers are in, the lines get redrawn so that everyone is representing virtually the same number of people.
I'm going to start here with, as far as issues are concerned, with the small businesses, because we've seen, and I'm pretty sure you and I touched on this when we spoke during the primary run, because of the coronavirus pandemic and the shutdowns, we've seen, I believe that the last number I heard was around 3,000 or so businesses in the Tri-County, Palm Beach, Miami-Dade, and Broward counties, are gone for good, mom and pops, which is very, very sad. One of the things when I spoke with your opponent, Dr. Ben-Yonas, in this race, one of the ideas that he had was to give a property tax break to small businesses for a certain period of time to help them recover. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that. If that's something that he plans to bring to the legislature should he get there. But I wanted to also bring that to your attention since you're running as the Democrat in a very Democrat-heavy district. Not that I'm hedging my bets because I feel it's anybody's shot. Is that something that you would consider listening to him about if you were to win and he wasn't?
I think that there are a number of things that small businesses need. I'm not sure that a property tax deduction or reduction is one of them. But I think more importantly, businesses need to know that government has their back, that they're going to have some protections from lawsuits, from liability, as long as they are meeting certain requirements that the local governments and the state government are requesting or requiring, and they are doing that in good faith. They really just need to feel that they are going to be protected going forward. We all want everybody to get back to work. We know that we haven't hit rock bottom yet, unfortunately, because we just haven't seen the fallout that's going to be coming from all of the unemployment and all of those, like you said, very sad businesses that may not ever be able to be recreated. But if we set our public policy properly, we will be able to create an environment where different businesses may come back, the same business owners, but with a new idea or something else that a service that needs to be provided. So as long as we are remembering that small business owners are the backbone of our state, they are incredibly important, and we provide the foundation that they need to rebuild, they will be able to do that. And I think liability is one of the bigger things they're worried about.
Okay, it's interesting that you said that we haven't hit rock bottom because it seems like the unemployment numbers are improving.
in terms of the economy and what is going to happen to it, and as more people in the aviation field and the tourism industry continue to be laid off, and those industries have to redesign themselves. You know, you think about, we always say at my office, we're kind of like, you know, the candlestick makers aren't the ones who invented the light bulb. You know, the stagecoach drivers, you know, weren't in on the first automobile.
Right.
You've got to be able to reinvent yourself. And we're not at that place yet where people are going to be able to do that. We don't know where the back end of the virus is, when people are going to be able to ever get back to where we were. So I don't think we know what it's going to look like, and we can't know. But we have to start creating the opportunity for people to find a way to get back to work. If we just keep doing what we're doing, we're going to see a world of hurt worse than what we're looking at already.
All right.
And the legislature's budget is you know, it's down by billions.
Well, that's another thing. And in speaking with some candidates that are incumbents, one of the things that was, you know, that's been brought up is during the last legislative session, I mean, it wrapped up around the time we were starting to hit the pandemic. So the budget, obviously, for this fiscal year doesn't look like what the budget should have looked like, because nobody knew.
Right. It looks more like 2008.
Right. Well, I don't know if you understood the way I explained that. It's the budget wasn't crafted expecting the pandemic.
No, it was not. Exactly right. Now, the governor made some really difficult decisions. He called it the Red Wedding when he made all of his vetoes, and he did veto a lot, and was able to save some of the budget there. But we are predominantly reliant on sales tax for our general revenue. That is where it comes from. The majority of it, more than 75% of the state budget, is funded by sales tax. When you have no tourism industry to speak of, when no one is coming into your state and going to your beaches and, you know, going to your attractions, Disney had to lay off 28,000 people. We have not seen the end of this. Yeah.
We should say in Florida that the majority of that was California. We did have several thousand here, though, in Florida. The 28,000 number
we
that
did.
We put out there.
Correct.
In the news for sensational purposes. Most of that's in California, where those parks still haven't been able to reopen. But we are bleeding jobs at Disney World Orlando as well, and it's so sad. As a huge fan of the Disney World, and I had to give up my annual pass just because you got to go through too many hoops to go there, and then worry about catching a virus while you're there. But anyway, I'm sure they're doing it.
Well, I'll tell you, the Magic Kingdom has been open since July 18th.
Yeah.
They are, you know, it is a very safe experience for everything I've heard. And Universal has been open since June. They see 20 to 30,000 people a day. And there's no, news of dramatic spikes or either one of those attractions being a super spreader of any kind.
Let me ask you, does that surprise you, though?
No, because if people would just do what we needed to do and not, you know, draw a line in the sand and create a political divisiveness that doesn't need to be there, we would be in much better shape. We did not have to do what we have done. If we had not, over the last couple of decades, underfunded and not prioritized public health, we would have had the funding in place to do rapid testing and contact tracking and tracing. That is how you get your arms around this virus. You didn't have to close everything down. If you had the resources in place to find out who had it and who they had been in contact with and isolate those people, that's what we needed to do, and we didn't, and we failed. And now we have to pick up the pieces, and we have to make sure that we are prepared should the next virus, which will be different than this one, come our way. And so, there are things to be thankful for, obviously, but we definitely could have done a much better job.
And picking up on your point, I was going to ask what you if you would say the same thing about the one of your priorities is, on your website is fix our broken unemployment system. Of course, you're referring well in part to the website that was such a big issue.
Yes, in part to the website that was intentionally created to cause frustration and not be able to allow individuals who are unemployed to navigate it appropriately and receive their benefits. That is my opinion. It was done so that we would have to pay out the least amount of money because we have the lowest compensation in the country for the shortest amount of time because we have the shortest benefits period of anyone else in the country. And it was definitely done on purpose. But more importantly, what we are not talking about is all of the unemployed now no longer have workplace benefits. They not only do, it's great, I was talking to someone and they were like, but wait, on the state website it says, you know, 98.9% of all unemployment claims have been paid. And said, those are the ones that they're considering eligible. Well, how many have applied and are not eligible? They're not getting any benefits. They don't count that those people haven't been paid because they don't count them as eligible. Not only are we not helping those folks out with compensation, no one is going to be able to do preventative care, go to the dentist, you know, have the CAT scan that they need to see if the lump is, you know, malignant or not. There are so many things that we are not doing that the tip of the iceberg is the unemployment compensation failure of that system. It goes way beyond that when you drop that pebble in the water.
All right. Let me ask you, you have somebody running against you, so and I'm pretty sure I asked you this question, and it's pretty standard, basic elementary election question, but why choose Kelly Skidmore over the opponent?
I have a track record that you can follow, you can see. I'm an open book. I have an open mind and open door policy, but I am an effective legislator. I have proven that. We need someone at this point in our history that has some idea of how the legislature works, what the legislative process is, how to defend and protect parts of the budget that I know are going to be attacked because they are the biggest pots, which are healthcare and education, to, you know, try and make sure that we prioritize the budget. You know, term limits has created an unfortunate situation where we have had a lack of visionaries in the legislature for the last 20 years. There is no one who sees beyond their next 2-year term or 4-year term. That is the length of our vision as elected officials, unfortunately. We need to start looking long-term at the state of Florida. And when you've had some previous experience and you understand the process, both from as a staff person and an elected official, it makes all the difference in the world. I'm very knowledgeable about all aspects of the budget, about healthcare, education, state affairs. I've served on a number of committees. I was a leader in my caucus, ranking member on healthcare policy and healthcare appropriations. And I feel like I have a lot to offer the voters in terms of that level of knowledge and experience. And I think that the people of District 81 would be in much better shape if they voted for me.
Do you think that there should be no term limits in Tallahassee?
I've never been a fan of term limits. For those who do think that they are important and make a difference, 8 years is not enough, especially in a legislative seat where you are in the Capitol for 60 days out of the year and expected to understand and operate a $90 billion business. It's not fair to the electeds, by the time you figure out how things are supposed to be working, it's time to go, and that's just not right. I think that House members, my personal opinion, House members should have 4-year terms, Senate members should have 6-year terms, and if you want to have a maximum, make it 12.
Okay, interesting.
Because House members never stop running. You never stop running for election in a 2-year term.
I know this is completely off subject because we're talking about the state of Florida, but what when we talk about term limits, what about the U.S., what about Congress?
Well, they don't have term limits. So.
Right. Right. I mean, but there are a lot of folks that say they should.
Well, it's called an election.
Okay. All right.
You know, 20 years ago, the Democrats were in charge of everything. Now the Republicans are in charge of everything. That was, you know, that happened. The switch happened before term limits. You can win elections. You can do what you need to do. There's this notion that incumbents can't lose, which is just a falsehood. You know, before we had term limits, the average term for a member of the Florida House was 7 years. People come and go, but those people that really understand the process and can help transition new people in and have some understanding of where we've been and where we need to go, that we lost all that.
Well, you guys aren't paid nearly as much as U.S. congressional members either. So,
no, it's a part-time gig.
Yeah. So, I mean, they get some big checks in Washington. So you could see why somebody would be tempted to stay there forever.
No one does it for the money in Florida. No.
Right. All right. Anything
everyone. Sorry, I was just going to say, everyone that I've worked with in the past, I know, enters into this with good intentions. We can agree and we can disagree and we can fight, but at the end of the day, we all are there representing the same number of people, and we're there to do the best job that we can to represent our constituents, and it's best if we can all do it and work together.
Well, you'd like to think everybody feels that way, and I sure hope you're right. All right. Anything before we wrap up?
Well, thank you, Joel. I appreciate the service that you provide to your listeners and letting them know who's running and what we stand for, and looking forward to being victorious on November 3rd. And if you want to follow up on November 4th, give me a call.
All right. I appreciate your time. Once again, State Representative Kelly Skidmore running for State House 81 here in my election spotlight.